Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and as you know, this is my favorite time of the week.
I would never have guessed.
And I brought along one of my favorite people who just spoke to you.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. This is Richard.
Don't you just love to hear his voice? The voice of the master, what can I say? And this evening, as our guest, we have a gentleman by the name of Socrates, who is credited as one of the founders of Western philosophy. And I felt that we should have an opinion or a statement by someone who was a philosopher, and who better than Socrates. And if you would like to receive email giving you information as to who are going to be our guests and other such important things, where would people go, Richard, to get those emails?
They would go to the 2012countdown.com and they would enter their name and email address on the top or bottom of any page on that website, and bingo.
That's what I like. And you know, women like bingo.
Actually, there's one more step to bingo, and that is acknowledge the email notification that you get. But I'm sure you've done that on lots of websites by now.
I'm sure that they have. And have you what I should say first before you connect, I want to suggest to our listeners to call the name Socrates, as Richard describes his energy, and perhaps you will feel it on some level. I'd like to have my listeners participate in this if they can. So, Richard, have you connected with Socrates?
Hard not to, actually. He's making himself very well known to me. And Socrates has quite a powerful energy. He, again, is essentially based in love, but carries quite a deal of power. I anticipate he was very forthright in his life. People would not have doubted what he said. When he spoke what he had to say, I suspect stayed said, if you understand my meaning. There is this power, this directness, this certainty in his energy. I experience his energy very centrally, which in essence is love. But there is this power, there is this, as I said, certainty, this directness, this forthrightness, this... You could call it wisdom, perhaps. This understanding might be another word that is so clear in the energy that I receive from this individual. Very, very interesting, very direct, very wonderful to connect with him. Reminds me a little bit of the man Giordano Bruno that we had some time ago. Carries a very similar directness, and if my understandings are accurate, they are both from the same monad. It's very, very interesting, very similar energy.
It sounds to me like if you were in a room with Socrates, you would notice him right away.
Well, certainly if he had something to say, you would know. He may not impose himself upon a room, but certainly if he had something to say, you had a cause to interact with him, you would know that you had interacted with him. Probably wouldn't forget it.
So, does he have a message for us, Richard?
Let's see what
he has to say. I suspect he does.
Well, he wouldn't have responded to your request if he didn't have something to say.
Yeah, he told me he did.
Let's see what it is. This is Socrates, and it is a pleasure to be asked to come forth in this forum, you might call it, where I am able to come forth across this great skein of time, you might say, from when I lived to your time. And of course, I am speaking to you in the now, but my nature, you might say, was formulated both as the soul expression that came forth in that lifetime and by the life that I lived. And so those qualities become stamped upon my soul, indeed upon anybody's soul, you might say. And I would suggest to you that this is why, in a sense, you, Richard, experience the energies of these various individuals in the way that you do. It is this combination of the specific soul energy combined with the experiences and the behaviors that were gathered or implemented in that lifetime by the egoic self. These things, in a sense, mix together to create the ongoing soul energy that you experience, and that is what you are experiencing as you connect with me, as you did energetically. And in a sense, it provides the context within which I give you my message, that you bring my message forth. It is coming forth in a way, resting upon the energy of who and what I am and who and what I was in that lifetime. So this is why you are able to both get that sense of an individual and to bring forth the message in the way that you do. So I felt that it was useful to explain this a little for you and also for your listeners, because it is perhaps not immediately obvious to you or to them as to how this in fact comes together. And it is something that I have understood for a long time. And so with that context in place, I will say that the imagery that has come down into your time of who and what I was and how I lived are largely accurate. As you may know, I was not one who wrote very much, but rather I lived my life in a particular manner, and also I was a teacher. And so your knowledge of how I lived and who I was, you might say, has been brought to you not by my words, but by those who studied with me, who had been my students, you might say, and others who had associated with me in that lifetime. It is their words that have come down to you rather than my own. And I will simply say that it is my perception that those words, those images that have been left in history, you could say, in the current consciousness, perhaps might be a better way to express it, are largely accurate. I was a deeply spiritual man, a deeply mystical man who understood what it meant to go within. I understood what it meant to be human. I understood what it meant to be a soul on a journey. All of these things I understood. And I grasped a sense of truth, you might say, that not very many people grasp in a lifetime. And so I was able to gather those truths and to an extent share them with those that studied with me or followed in my footsteps, you might say. And it was really from that understanding that I taught. I hesitate to use the word morality because that is, in my view, a very abused term in your consciousness. Rather, I would say that I spoke from truth, and I taught from truth, and I taught people how to consider, to question, to argue in a manner that elucidated understanding and truth and exposed, you might say, the shortfalls in logic, in rational thought, but also in spiritual understanding. My teaching and my life were very much based in the understanding of who and what I was at a soul level, and the things that I stood for and taught were far more important to me than my life itself. And that is why I made the choice at the end of my life to give up my life rather than give up the things that I stood for and understood, which was what was asked of me by those who had the temerity to supposedly judge me or seek to undermine me. They not for one moment expected me to give up my life in the manner that I did. It shocked them to the core. And part of the reason I made that choice was to make the point to these people that they stood for nothing. They did not understand what it meant to be a human being. And so my example resonated not only with them, but indeed all the way down through time to your time. That example still lives in the skeins of time, in the vibrations of the consciousness in which you live. And there have been many others that have made such a choice. I am not saying that I was unique in this, but the moment in time and the individual that I was meant that that action resonated in the way that I describe. So all of those images, you might say, of how I behaved, the stands that I took, the things that I taught, and the way that I died are in large measure accurate. And so I wanted to take a moment to explain these things to you before I talked to you about your time, because it is important that you understand in a manner how I was anchored in that time, anchored in that lifetime, and how I operated and expressed myself. I spoke with a truth then, and I speak with a truth now that no one will ever compromise. That is my nature. It always has been, and it always will be. So I want all of you to be clear about this, and I trust that you are able to gather a sense of the simplicity, the directness, and the certainty of how I stand and how I speak. Because I feel that understanding will serve you as you listen to my message to you tonight. And my message to you, my friends, is really to speak to you about the time in which you live. Because in a way, I understood in my time that your time would come. Your time in all its aspects. Your time in the sense of how powerful those who wished to manipulate and control humanity would become. And you might say it was the very same kinds of individuals that I stood up against in my time. They wished to demean and destroy someone who would stand in life, in truth, in the way that I stood. And this was a complete anathema to them. And so it is, you might say, similar individuals in power who lie and deceive and stand for nothing, really, and are really serving those dark masters behind the scenes. In your time, you have more hidden human individuals who tread that path than perhaps were present in my time. But the same forces behind those individuals have driven the individuals in my time and in yours. Though I will say that you live in the time when those, you might say, off-planet forces and powers are being eliminated. Indeed, I would say to you that they have, in large measure, already been eliminated. And you live in a glorious time, a time of transition in the human experience, when the greatness of what it means to be a human being, that in a sense I was able to touch, if not fully implement in my lifetime, but that full expression will come forth for all who choose it in your time. And so it is truly a wondrous moment in which you find yourselves. And in many ways, what I was setting the ground for, the groundwork, the understandings, the way of thinking, was in large measure directed to providing some threads in consciousness that could come down into your time and provide a basis for people to grasp truth. It was the grasping of truth and the expression of that truth in what you consider Western culture that was my hallmark. And even though many have sought to destroy it or demean it or diminish it, they truly have not been able to, because of the power with which it was etched into human consciousness and brought forth by the writings of Plato in particular and others that expressed this, and this has flowed down into your time. And so it has formed a foundation upon which individuals in your time can and do stand in truth, even though they do not fully understand what it is that they have connected with. It is a thread that I placed in the energetic grid that surrounds the planet that others now connect to. And there were others that came forth and refreshed that thread, but its essence was placed by me. And so, in a way, my lifetime was in fact a lifetime preparing, you might say, a strand of human consciousness for this time, so that those who reach for truth, those who seek to go within and understand who and what they are connecting with that tradition, that thread of consciousness. Now, I am not saying that I am the only one that has laid such threads. There have been a number of others at various other points in time. The one that you know of as Yeshua, for example, was very much such an individual. Another that I would mention to you who still is present in your world, though largely hidden, is the great Babaji. These individuals have also done this. However, they in neither case were in truth in what you would consider Western consciousness. It is the Greek traditions that have flowed down into your time rather than the traditions of the yogis of the Himalayas or indeed of Yeshua, because the messages, the understandings of Yeshua that have come forth to your world are very much packaged by the Catholic Church, which essentially has distorted the truth of who and what that individual was. So I do not claim to be doing anything unique in that regard, but rather mention that the thread that I placed was in what has become known as Western culture. So there are many threads that one might grasp and indeed draw together as you begin to grasp this understanding within that a growing number are grasping as the energies have changed in this special time upon the planet. And I want you to understand that as more and more grasp this thread, you might say, this desire to go within and understand truth, the truth of who and what they are. They are grasping that tradition. They are building upon that foundation. And indeed, they are stepping into the beginnings of this extraordinary transformation that awaits you in this very special time upon the planet. And I will restate what many of your previous guests have stated, and that is that you live in a time when there will be a transformation in consciousness on the planet for those who choose it, those who wish to move beyond this manipulated and controlled consciousness. And I will not spell this out in more detail unless you have specific questions, because there are others that have done this with far more detail than I could begin to, because they have been more focused upon it than I. But I wanted to have you understand that there is this connection between me and my life and what is unfolding in your beautiful time upon the planet. And I am so excited to be able to witness the beginning threads of these changes as they begin to be, you might consider, laid within that current consciousness, as they form a platform upon which people will stand before they move to a new level of consciousness, new relative to where you currently are, but not new in the totality of things, since in truth it is, initially at least, reclaiming the consciousness which existed in that time that you know of as Atlantis. So this really is all I wish to say. I trust that this has been of value to you, and I am very willing to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Socrates and Richard. We appreciate the two of you for coming forth and giving us this information. I would like to mention to our listeners, the time that we have goes by so quickly. And if you have a question for Socrates, please call in now with it, or else the program will be over and you won't get a chance to do this. I do have a question for Socrates, and I'd like to know something about the relationship that you had between you and your student. Can you give us some idea of this? Maybe the responsibilities or how you worked with them?
I sought to have my students understand how I viewed life and why. I sought to teach them how to go within and to find the truth that lives within. As you know, one of the core teachings of Yeshua was the kingdom of God is within. And this is a very simple way of packaging, you might say, the truth that exists, the reference that exists within, that transcends the experience of an individual human life. And that truth, for me, was more important than life itself, as I have expressed. And I'm not saying that everyone who followed my teachings would experience the same things as I experienced, because it is an individual thing, and I taught my students this. But above all else, I was teaching them to find their sense of truth within and to be willing to question, to analyze, to expose what they took to be truth to the sword of debate, of discussion, of criticism even, because it is only through these processes that you can refine, you can strip back to the bone the truth, you can strip away the dogma, you might say, or the egotistical elements that might cling to that fundamental core of truth. And so I taught my students, firstly, how to go within, but secondly, how to expose what they were taking to be truth to the sword of analysis, of questioning, so that they could clarify their understandings for themselves to find their own truth. This, my friends, was true in my time, and it is just as true in your time. I also taught them the value and importance of that beautiful gift that humanity has been given called intuition, because it is the guidance mechanism that leads everyone through their life. And I taught my students how to understand this and trust this also. It might sound like, in a sense, following that intuitive guidance is in conflict with this, as I described it, sword that I encourage them to use to strip back to the bone the essence of their understandings of truth. But in truth, they are not in conflict. They are truly simply different faces of the same expression of what it means to be a human being. So I taught these things to my students, and certainly I feel some of them understood this. Plato certainly understood these things.
Thank you so much. So much of what you are discussing and taught was really unique for your time. How did you come across these truths? Was it through your own intuition?
Primarily, it arose from my own searching, my own sense of myself that drove me to this place. You might say, above all else, it arose from my soul expression. But then, as I was describing earlier, how that was expressed in my lifetime reflected the social setting in which I lived. There was a listening, you might say, for someone to stand in the world in the way that I stood. The social context, in large measure, allowed it. I'm not saying it was overly tolerant of it, but it allowed that possibility to be expressed, and not only to be expressed, but indeed provided the opportunity for me to gather others who were interested in the stand that I took. So, in a way, I chose the time in which I came forth, and like everyone, I chose my parents to provide some level of context, if you will, that got me started on my path. So, in large measure, it was that combination of what came forth in me at the soul level and the context in which I found myself. These things alloyed together to allow me to be who and what I was in that lifetime.
Thank you. Did you teach in classes, groups, or one-on-one?
I did both of these things. There were times when I worked with classes where there were groups who came and studied with me, who worked with me, who would debate and argue with me, because not only did they learn from those processes, but I also learned from them. And I was very keen to set up those contexts, you might say. But also, I worked one-on-one with certain individuals who really wanted to seek to follow closely in my shoes, you might say, or I found great delight in working with, because they thought very much as I thought. So it was a mixture of these two.
Thank you so much. One of the things that I find very interesting, your thoughts are so novel. And I suspect that as you had these discussions with your student, you formulated new ideas, new concepts, because you were sharing ideas with others. And it seems to me that that is a way that a very important way that we all learn is through debate and discussion with other individuals. Can you give us a little insight into that?
I would agree with this. As I said, it was one of the reasons I set up, you might consider, a classroom environment, not to preach to my students, but rather to engage with them. There were also others who were more my peers, you might say, with whom I also engaged at times in groups, because this process, as you say, refined my understandings as well as theirs. It not only provided a platform for me to convey my understandings and ideas, but indeed to help me clarify and to expand my understandings and ideas in a manner which served me and served them. So, yes, as you say, the process of debate, you might consider, or discussion or challenge in an egalitarian setting is so, so important to the fostering of ideas. There is not a place for a hierarchical process, you might say, where I might act as a directing style of teacher or lecturer. This was not the way that I sought to work, because it does not in itself foster or engender that debating process that I sought to encourage for both the growth of my students and myself. So, as I say, it was this egalitarian context that I sought to foster, because I in no way felt at risk. I did not feel threatened by anyone challenging what I might say or my understandings or ideas. They benefited from those challenges, and I benefited from those challenges, and they benefited from those challenges. And it was only by having an egalitarian context where they did not feel threatened by challenging me in any manner that this progression was possible.
Thank you. I suspect that there wasn't a tuition fee for students to come and work with you. How did you support yourself?
There were services, you might say, I provided to others by way of tutoring, but also I was mathematically inclined, and so I was able to provide a level of, you might say, consulting services to individuals of wealth and means that enabled me to garner the income that I required to do what I needed to do in life. Money was not a major driver in any manner for me, and so when you are not driven by it, it does not drive you, you might say. I was not seeking great wealth in any manner as a measure of my value or truth in the world. So my requirements were limited in that way, you might say.
Thank you. I'd like to spend a moment with talking about life on the other side, where you are. I suspect that you have methods where you can still learn and teach. Can you give us a word about that?
There are many paths that a soul might walk when it leaves your dimension. And the first focus, you might say, is one of learning, of growing beyond that very narrow experience that arises from that current human consciousness. It is, in many ways, very narrow and very focused, given the linear time experience and other aspects. It also, as a result, brings forth a level of focus on a particular issue that is very powerful in that consciousness and is difficult to replicate in you might say, levels beyond this. So skills learned in that consciousness are very useful and in ways difficult to preserve as one moves beyond it. But nevertheless, it is possible. And I feel I have achieved this in some measure because it was such a focus in my lifetime on Earth. So initially there was a focus on learning, but it was recognized that some of the skills and abilities that I had in my lifetime had been preserved, and they were skills and abilities that I could teach to others on this side. And so I have been both a student and a teacher, you might say, since I have moved beyond that consciousness.
That's beautiful. This might seem like a strange question, but I suspect that there's not a lot of people who really understand this. Can you give us some direction or thought, as you understand it, to the concept of going within? What is that like to you?
The notion of going within is what you might consider, at least initially, a process that is best addressed through what you would call meditation, spending time quietly by yourself for a period of time where you will not be disturbed, where it is quiet and where you are comfortable and where you can simply bring your awareness within. So it is like seeking to turn off the normal five senses, as it is expressed, and bringing your awareness inside what seems to be the inside of the physical body. But in fact, as you begin to unfold, it is actually coming within what I would describe as infinite consciousness. So I would describe going within as a mechanism that is relevant to a human being to, you might say, withdraw your focus from the five senses, the world in which you live, and begin to focus on who and what you are as you come forth into that consciousness. And the more you do this, the more you begin to open the door to the understanding of who and what you are. At the very least, what will grow is some sense of self, some awareness that there is rather more to you than this physical being that you take yourself to be for the most part. And the more you do this, the more it grows within, and you may become aware of many things, or you may not, depending on the nature of your journey. Certainly everyone will become more energetically sensitive. You will feel things that in the past that you did not feel. You may begin to see things. You may begin to see other beings in other dimensions beyond your current consciousness. Certainly what will happen is that you will grow a sense of yourself that you did not have before you began to do this work. I do not know any other way to begin to open this door. And once you have begun to open it, then you can carry it with you in life. You do not need to always be in what I would call a meditative state in this isolated manner to be able to experience this. Once you build this sense of truth within yourself, you carry it with you within life. So it is like opening the door to some sense of the truth of yourself so that you can carry that with you in life, so that it can begin to define how you live, to inform your life as you live it moment to moment, day to day, in the living of life.
Thank you so much for that information. I want to focus a question in another direction, if you will. And this has to do with family relationships. You probably have observed here on Earth that family relationships aren't always loving as they should be. I'd like for you to address that and give us some of your wisdom as to how to make these relationships more loving.
Firstly, I would question your premise that family relationships should always be loving in the sense of being peaceful, being harmonious, because in truth, there are individuals who come forth in particular lifetimes in circumstances where they specifically come forth to challenge one another for one reason or another. So these things are not always harmonious. Of course, the intention of these interactions is to understand the basis for the differences and as a result grow understanding and harmony. So the first element that is important is for the individuals to begin to understand who and what they are. Most of humanity, as you would recognize, do not have a clue about who and what they are beyond this, you might say, piece of meat that they take themselves to be. They think they are just this expression, and maybe they've bought some version of religion that is, again, disconnected from them, that is brought to them through some hierarchical organization that has nothing to do really with the truth of how they are connected to their creator. And so the first step really is for individuals to begin to get an understanding of who and what they are and begin to open up the skills as I describe. And when people do this, then they open the door to beginning to understand the conflicts. They are less likely to become caught up in the minutiae. They are more likely to be able to stand in a place of forgiving others and asking for forgiveness or apologizing for something they may have done to upset another. These things are such a normal part of life, and yet people do not have the skills and understanding to simply walk away from these conflicts or to deal with the short-term conflicts in the way that I describe, because in doing so, it is the only way to open the door to the broader understanding that, in fact, the individuals have come forth to garner. In the lifetime that you are in, there are many examples where individuals have been abused by another in one or more past lives and have agreed to come back to give that individual a chance to heal and choose a different path in this life. And in many ways, because of the shift that is occurring, it is something of a last opportunity for those individuals to take care of these issues and to heal them for themselves, not so much for the one that they have wounded in the past, but rather to heal themselves, to recognize what they have been doing. And if they have not taken the opportunity to begin to understand the truth of who and what they are, then it is a fruitless path. And the truth of the matter is, in most cases, from what I can witness, these challenging relationships have not progressed in a manner that those who were willing to participate in these from the point of view of allowing the other individual to heal, from that point of view, these have in large measure not progressed in any manner as a result of this further opportunity being given. So ultimately, the bottom line of working towards a more harmonious basis for relating, you might say, is to have the individuals build a sense of themselves in the way that I described. And unfortunately, very few of humanity today are as yet doing this.
Thank you for bringing forth these most interesting concepts and ideas. Before you go, I would like to have some kind of thoughts about your viewpoint of what we might consider a God or the creator of the cosmos. What have you learned about this being on the other side?
I have learned that the picture of the creator in the center of this cosmos is, in human terms, rather distorted. Firstly, I have come to understand that this is not the only cosmos which exists. Indeed, there are other expressions of creation. And so the one that sits at the center of this cosmos is not the ultimate source of creation, you might say. And it is important to recognize that, for the most part, everything which exists within this cosmos has been created by that being that sits in the middle of this cosmos. And as you will recognize, there have been both forces of light and forces of darkness that have been present in this cosmos, and indeed upon your planet. And so this being has not just been creating the beings that are of the light, but also those of the dark, and frankly has been just as committed to defending those beings of the dark as it has been defending those of the light. So there is this idealized view of this being in the center of the cosmos amongst humanity that I, in large measure, at least in this cycle of Brahma up to this point, would not agree with for the reasons that I have described. It is undoubtedly a very powerful being, a very important element in the unfolding of creation as it exists in this cosmos. But I have been able to gather information about other cycles of Brahma, these very long cycles of time that exist, and I have garnered the understanding that indeed the plan for a particular cycle of Brahma does not arise from this being in the center of the cosmos, but rather is, you might say, almost like a computer program loaded into that being in the center of the cosmos for it to unfold and experiment, you might say, in consciousness that is pre-programmed into this being. I would rather more describe this being as like what you would consider a supercomputer running many programs, many abilities, many different elements concurrently. And some of these at times are in conflict, but certainly I would not describe this being as always acting out of what you would call love, and yet ultimately everything, including it, are created from love. These things might sound to be some form of dichotomy, but in truth, they are not. And the key element which is relevant to that being in the center of the cosmos of the time in which you are in is that the time of the presence of the dark everywhere is ending. And so that element of the focus of this being in the center of this cosmos is being changed, is being reprogrammed, refocused, so that the light becomes its only focus. So I hope my words help to give you and others a little more understanding of the nature and the focus of this being, and to perhaps begin to dismantle some of this idealism that I sense most of humanity carries in regard to the nature of this being.
Socrates, you have come forth with so many interesting concepts and ideas, and I would like to thank you in a very special way for being here, answering our questions in a forthright manner, and we appreciate your service so much. And to you, Richard, I would like to thank you for your service, because without what you do, we could not have this show.
Thank you, Carolyn. We couldn't do it without what you do either.
We all play our little part, don't we? Which adds up to the whole.
Indeed.
So thank the two of you. And we do have a little bit of time, Richard. And what did you want to discuss by way of some interesting information that could help enlighten people in some manner?
Yes, I wanted to take a moment to just touch on some of the e-books that primarily you have brought forth in the past. Some of that material is really quite fascinating, I think. Firstly, there's an e-book that Archangel Michael gave Carolyn quite some years ago called Earth History, Past, Present and Future, which really talks about the history of the planet and also really what's unfolding in this time. And so it, in a way, it creates a context for what is happening. There is also an e-book that Pope John Paul II gave to Carolyn while he was lying in state, is that the term?
Yes.
After he died and before he was buried, when the public could view, the body and so on. And during that period, he came forth to Carolyn and gave her a bunch of messages. And the monad that he comes forth from is very interesting, very unexpected, you might say, because his monad has a responsibility for shepherding a very important you might say, searchlight of energy around the cosmos, and it's a searchlight of energy that's currently focused in this area of the cosmos called the Eye of Isis. And his monad has a responsibility for shepherding that energy, that searchlight around the cosmos. And so it's why he was here to, you might say, acclimate his monad's understanding of the energies on this planet and what was happening on this planet. And he adopted that leadership role, you might say, to leave an imprint within the consciousness. I personally think he could have chosen better than being a representative of a very dark organization, in my view, called the Catholic Church, but nevertheless, that's a separate subject. The essence of the individual is quite fascinating, and he was very, very closely connected to Mother Mary, interestingly enough. So that's quite a fascinating e-book, and there are several others there. I will give you a link to the page that has those e-books on one of our websites that you can go and check them out. Some of them may be of interest to you. There's fascinating information in those e-books, and I just felt it was worthwhile to take a moment to bring them into the awareness of our listeners tonight.
Thank you for mentioning that, Richard. Yes, there is a lot of interesting information in the different e-books, and there's one that has a lot of Chaos Before Creation has a lot of information in it about healing, which
indeed,
I think people would find very interesting.
Mm. Mm.
You have an e-book yourself. Why don't you discuss that?
yes, that's true. I do. The Coming Golden Age and How to Prepare for It. It was interesting how that unfolded, really, because it was not long after I began to work with you, Carolyn, and we connected up. It was like I just knew I had to write this, and so much of what's in it I, in a way, already knew it had gathered together. So writing it actually didn't take very long. I just had to, in a way, check the references of the understandings and to put all of that together. But what was interesting was, as I was completing the writing of it, I became aware, again, through my connection with Carolyn, that indeed Mother Mary had been prompting me and guiding me to write it. So that's really where the urgency had come from, you might say, to bring it forth. So in a way, it's really aiming to act as something of a bridge for those who are coming from the kind of place I was, which was very much left-brained, you know, scientifically trained and so on, and beginning to recognize there was something else going on beyond that. And to, in a way, illustrate how the scientific process, if you pursue it fully, actually reveals the spiritual side of things. And there are many threads within some of the extraordinary scientific work that's been done over the years that demonstrate that this fixed and defined world as we are encouraged to view it really is not like that at all, so, on so many levels.
Well, so, Richard, we've come to the end of our program, dear.
Okay.
And I want to thank you in another special way for bringing your work forward. You, as I said, without you, we could not do this show.
Likewise.
So
thank you.
I'm looking forward. Yes, and thanks to Socrates, he brought forth a lot of really interesting information. And so I say good night to you, Richard, and to everyone else who is listening. And I would like to offer a special thanks to those at BBS who take care of us.
Indeed.
Thank everyone.
Thank you, and good night for now.